we doing to on the Omer?
So today is Sefer Chinuch, and we are doing mitzvot 336, 337, 338. But it's also Yom HaShoah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it's also Yesod Shebet Gevura, the 13th day of the Omer.
Did you find your book?
I did.
So I just want to mention something about Yom HaShoah. So first of all, it's not the Orthodox Yom HaShoah. But I feel it's important still to recognize it because it is the state of Israel's Yom HaShoah. And it's actually the full name of the day is Yom HaShoah L'Gevura, the day of the Holocaust remembrance to strength. So it's interesting. So they initially wanted to commemorate at the beginning of the state. They wanted to have some kind of Holocaust commemoration. Also because the state was this current state was in a way born of the ashes of the Holocaust, although it certainly started before that. But there certainly was a desire for a Holocaust memorial day. The Orthodox said, we don't need it. We've had lots of tragedies in our history on this level, and they all are subsumed in Tisha B'Av. That's the day we do this. And Asara B'Tevet is the day, the 10th of the month of Tevet, which is a fast day. That's the day that people commemorate the yard sites for Holocaust victims that they don't know their yard site. So that is the yard site day. So that's within Orthodoxy. And I think that's within, so if you...
10th of...
The 10th of Tevet. 10th of Tevet.
And what is that day in general?
That's January-ish.
No, but Tisha. I mean before Holocaust,
The 10th of Tevet is the fast day. It's the breach of the walls that culminated in the burning of the Beit HaMikdash.
Okay.
So, but the breach of the walls of Jerusalem.
Which was sort of the final straw, so to speak.
So we commemorate that fast day on a regular basis. So I think if you just consider, because I hate to separate between the Orthodox and the non-Orthodox, but it is separated here. So if you just consider those who are keeping a full spectrum of customs and fasts and halachas, so within that full spectrum, there is a place for Holocaust remembrance that's already in place. And because we have unfortunately experienced so much over the years, from Chmelnytsky to Yimach Shemot, we refer to the Chmelnytsky massacres as Tach V'Tat. That refers to the years in which they occurred, Tach V'Tat, or...
What are these massacres?
The Chmelnytsky massacres were massacres in the Ukraine, and they were...
Terrible.
Brutal. The most awful, I mean, it was torturous, like the Holocaust, not in volume, but almost worse in torture, because they didn't just go killing, they tortured people. Horrible things that they did to people. They took pleasure in causing pain before the death, but so much. And it was all the people. It wasn't just in special places. It was all the peasants causing a lot of pain to a lot of Jews over to a 2-year period. So that's called the
Chmel.
And they wiped out whole town. It was just awful. It was the bloodiest massacre to date at that time. So that was 1600s-ish, right? So that was called Tach V'Tat. And that was subsumed by the... that's after the Spanish Inquisition.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, Spanish Inquisition first, 14. But this was considered the worst, certainly in Eastern Europe. And then the Holocaust replaced that. But that was, I mean, in terms of terror and torture and impact on the community, it was huge. So we have already a system of...
Remembering
and...
Memorializing.
And putting the pain into our calendar so that it wouldn't be everywhere spilling out all over the calendar. Because we can't... our whole calendar would be full of mourning days if we mourned every single massacre that happened throughout history. We can't do it.
Right.
So, nevertheless, after the Holocaust, and particularly for the less observant, it was very important to memorialize something. It was so fresh. So they wanted, initially, for the 14th day of Nisan, which is the anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, to be the day. However, that's Isru Chag, the day after Pesach. And Isru Chag means the tying up of the holiday. So, and we all know we just need a day to stare at the wall, right? But it's not just staring at the wall. There's bringing kids to the airport or whatever. You are tying up the energy of the holiday. It still has a festive... The festive nature spills over into that day. There's not school on that day. It's just like, it's a day of wrapping things up. So it's too festive a day to have for a Holocaust Remembrance Day. So they put it on the 28th of Nisan. Today is the 20th.
Today is the day they had the celebration in Israel yesterday. But I know today, I mean, on my calendar it says it's today.
No, so I'm just trying to remember. Well, last night it was, but I'm just trying to think. So maybe it's just different years, but they never do it. They always push it off a day. So maybe I was just reading. They always push it off a day if it's adjacent to Shabbat. So it would never be Motzei Shabbos and Sunday.
Maybe that's it.
If it's Motzei Shabbos and Sunday, it would be Sunday and Monday.
Yeah, I think that must be it because...
Because they don't want anybody to be Mechal Shabbos to set up the nighttime memorial services. You have to set up candles and stuff like that. They have speeches. They don't want anybody setting up... Right, they don't want anybody setting up sound systems and candles and stuff like that on Shabbos to get ready for the Motzei Shabbos.
So that must be why
they put it off a day. Yeah, so they put it off a day. Anyway, so in Israel, and it's interesting because I don't know.
No, it is today.
It is today.
Oh, and it's usually the 20s. I got you.
I'm not sure if it was pushed off this year or not, but it is pushed off.
But it is today.
It needs to be pushed off. Okay. But it is today. Today is the day. So in Israel, at night, the heads of state speak, and they usually have survivors light 6 torches to commemorate.
Running out of those.
Yeah. Running out of survivors. And then during the day, at 10 o'clock exactly, they have a moment of silence, sirens across the entire country, and everybody stops, even if you're driving on the highway. They always video it. You know, you can see it now on YouTube. It's an amazing thing just to, like, watch YouTube and you see the sirens, and they just go across the country and even the highways. Everybody stops, gets out of their car, stands for a whole minute, and then they get back in their car and the day continues.
It's the most eeriest thing.
It's very eerie. It really is eerie. Now, there are those people who say that's not a Jewish thing. You know, a moment of silence, where do we see that in Judaism? It's not Jewish. It's not a Yiddish Shazach. This is a non-Jewish commemoration on a non-appropriate date. So there are those people who say that. Nevertheless, I felt it important just to say, it is something that, why should we separate ourselves from the bulk of Klal Yisrael that is using this day to commemorate it? So we just need to at least be aware that this is the day that a lot of people do focus on.
And as Sandy said, since there are fewer and fewer survivors, it's up to us collectively to remember it however we do.
Yeah, so it for sure needs to be remembered, and it should not be divorced from being Jewish. This is not about racism, and it's not about scapegoatism, and this is about being a Jew. And so many people have made this, just like they've made the Seder into about slavery, or about freedom, about release from your whatever it is. That's not what it is. It's about being Jewish. And the Holocaust is about being Jewish, too. It never would have happened if it wasn't Jews. Right? It was about killing Jews. It was not about killing the other, and the Jews happened to be the other at the time. That's not what it's about. And we have to make sure that it doesn't devolve into just we need to think of the other.
Humanity.
Right. It's not that. So, I mean, we should be thinking never again and wonder why the Rwandans, my husband bought coffee from Rwanda, and doesn't say fair trade on the back, and all the other coffee we get from Costco has fair trade seals. So both of my boys right away notice it, like, Abba, look what you bought. And it was like, I don't drink conflict grounds.
I'm surprised they carried it, because Costco's usually pretty good.
That's so I pointed it out to him, and we agreed that in the future we'll check.
We got to check for the OU. We got to check for the fair trade. We got to check.
But nevertheless, I'm just saying that
there are bad things happening other places.
We should for sure have consciousness for what's going on for other people. And the truth is,
if Avi knew what diamonds were about, he'd get another job.
Yeah, probably. And on the planet, we don't have enough consciousness, certainly, for people of color. They're slaughtered, so we're not really paying that much attention. But the truth is, the Coptic Christians also in Egypt look really... Do we care? I mean, we don't. Are the Christians caring?
We don't care that much
about other people. That's the truth. I mean, that's just the nature of human beings. We don't care about other people. It's sad to see, but in general...
I don't think we can.
Right. It's too...
I think that the fact that we have access to...
So much information.
We have an obligation to say, wow. But we cannot possibly connect to all of the other tragedies. There's not a way.
Well, you know, you hear, okay, we should do something in Syria. The U.S., not the Jewish. Right. And now we got Korea
right.
Headed bomb.
Forget Korea. Now we got Korea with a bomb, but the truth is people have been starving in Korea.
Yeah, right, I was right.
Literally
say.
Eating their yards, whatever yeah. grass they
so
could
So that they
find.
Could support a million yeah. people in the army.
Yeah. I mean,
there's just no
we're not doing anything about that.
I don't think, it, I think we just are not capable.
I think it preceded our current incapacity.
I think it's both.
A
I, think
time
we,
ago.
I think we don't care. We care more about our standard of living than about theirs. Right? So if you want to call that standard of living.
I
but
think if there were Jews in Korea, Jews of America would do something about it. And the whole
well, that's
world
interesting.
I think Jews would, yeah.
yeah. What about
Jews, right? But what about, I mean, how.
In World War II.
There were
but
Jews,
there were Jews in
that,
America.
Because of that. And they said, never again.
Well
yes, I would like to think you're right.
But it's very, very important not to judge the Jews of the 30s and the 40s by the standards of today.
Because they didn't
very
have
important.
As much information.
They did not, for, not just information. They didn't have as much sense of ability to
power.
Work with the... They did not have as much power. Straight up. They did not have as much power. There
Money.
Was not a state. We were not a stated people.
Right.
Right, people were still very reticent about being Jewish. Definitely had the consciousness of being too Jewish. When was the last time you told any of your kids or friends you're being too Jewish? Right, that's not part of our vocabulary, but it was at the time. Everybody knew to lay low. They came from centuries,
places, right, centuries
and
of,
places of
right.
where you
like
don't,
we were just talking
don't
about
say it out loud.
Pogroms
today,
and
it's like who? I mean, of course you say it out loud. You wear whatever you want. You know, you can wear whatever Jewish bling you want. You can walk down the street in your kapata. Everybody wears a yarmulke. No problem in this country. Right? So we don't understand at all what it's like to be a Jew from then. And there's no way that we can judge after all the, not just Jewish, but everybody else's, the whole civil rights movement too. Everybody marching on Washington and demanding from Congress people and whatever it is. We can't understand what it was like before that world. We were... Basically, most of us, I think,
yeah,
were born into that
I don't remember
that
anybody
world.
Wearing a kippah when I grew up. You know, they would, my grandfather would wear a hat. My,
right, they wore caps on top.
They were hats.
Yeah,
you know,
everybody wore a cap. They had those Kangol caps to cover your yarmulke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so not today. And today everybody's in your face, but everybody's in your face.
Whatever it is.
Right, so we cannot judge. I mean, yeah, I do think we there is what to take
but
to task
an interesting
over. But we cannot judge based on who
Jews
we are today
Korea.
And what we would do today, why they didn't do what we would do. You know, why the Jews of America didn't march on Washington like they should have.
Why our government
they, people
didn't
do
anything.
That. Okay, we could definitely hold our government to account. For sure, for sure.
They
for
did
sure.
know.
And they
for
knew.
Sure.
Yeah.
They knew. So I'm not just saying it was lack of information.
No.
There definitely wasn't as much information, and also people couldn't believe it. There was that too. But there also wasn't, the Jew did not have the power or the tenacity or the anything that they have today.
But so. If you look at Rwanda, you know, if there had been enough Rwandans here with the power, with the wealth, with the political, where, you know, then maybe that,
isn't right.
yeah. you know, Clinton has said
I
over and over again that was his
it,
big
yeah.
regret.
I think for sure. Not to mention just even, I mean, I even think about with all the movies that we have and how easily people eat and drink while they're watching horrible stuff on the screen. We've really conditioned ourselves as a society to completely divorce ourselves and live in two worlds at the same time. I'm completely, the reason why I went to the theater is so that I should be totally sucked into the suspension of disbelief into the screen, and at the same time I'm able to compartmentalize and realize I'm not scared,
this isn't real.
It's not real, I could eat, I could drink, I could even text somebody, except for I'm scared they'll kick me out of the theater if I do, because now they say they will, you know, like people can do both. So I think we can do that when we read the news too. Oh, isn't that sad, can you pass the jam? Like living both. Okay, now on to our
and it's the 13th day of the Omer.
It's the 13th day of the Omer. It is Yesod Shebe Gvura. I just wrote the Sfirot across the top. We're not going to go into it. We have in the past. But just to remember what the Sfirot are, and that this is the 6th day of the 2nd week, which puts us in Yesod Shebe Gvura. Okay, so the precept of affecting...
So far, so good.
Yeah. Right. I got an app, by the way, I'm sure.
I do too.
I have an app
have
that rings an alarm at night. Yep. So if you click it
yeah,
at night, if you click it at night, then it doesn't remind you at 11:30 in the morning the next day. But if you don't click it at night, it reminds you again in
oh,
the morning.
Oh, which one is that?
It's called Sphera Light.
Oh.
And I think there's a Sphera Heavy if you buy it.
If you pay.
Oh, I have one called the Omer. But it only clicks at night.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. And it has the whole tefillah as soon as you open it up.
It's right, like, right, right.
Yeah. And the day.
Two. Yeah, it's nice.
I have two. Okay. All right. We have enough.
Right, okay. The precept of effecting justice between buyer and seller. Now, 336 and 337 are very long. 337, the prohibition against wronging anyone in buying and selling. These are both pages and pages long, which is interesting in the context of Sefer Chinuch. Not that every other halacha doesn't have so much law involved in it, but look how long these are.
My goodness, gracious.
Right, it's really long.
Ooh.
Right?
Well, that's because buying and selling was probably what most people did. Even
still
farmers, no matter what.
That's what he says, right? This is something we do every day. It's impossible, he says in the bottom of the first paragraph, it's impossible for people to live even one day without it.
Right, so.
Purchases and sales. That's what we do all day. Everybody is involved in something. My son's involved in bitcoins right now. It's an alternate currency, non-government-based currency.
Yes,
he bought it like 13. He sold at 97, but it's 171 today.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's like eating his heart. He made $10,000. He's 19 years old. But if you would have waited till now, he's like every day, he's like, Ima, it's 171, Ima. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, people buy and sell all day long.
Real and unreal.
Real and unreal, yep.
Good, he can pay for his education this year.
Right. It's not a real currency, though, is the problem.
It is.
It is. The increase is...
Well, it's a real currency. You can really use it to really buy and really sell things. It's not government trackable. It's not government backed. So it's
But everybody doesn't accept it, right?
Not everybody.
Right.
No, it's not accepted everywhere.
Right.
But where it's accepted, you can use it. And in a way, it's like gold. Because the value on it is the value that the marketplace agrees upon. So that's how it's trying. And what's so attractive about it is that since it's not a government currency, it's not government controlled, and it's not traceable. So it's really convenient in the black market.
The dark net.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Silk Road is part of the dark net, apparently. That's a whole place where you can buy and sell stuff. Silk Road is where you get the weapons, the drugs, and the things to make bombs, but not bombs. Catalysts and chemicals.
Good
that's
to
on
know.
Silk Road.
I'm obviously very ignorant.
I know this stuff. I'm telling you, when I gave somebody my password today, and it starts with an exclamation point and has a letter in it and has another thing at the end of it and a capital, they're like, whoa, that's a good password. I'm like, I'm Donnie's mom.
And you change it every day.
Yours
because
is
you
not
do.
Password.
No. It used to be, though. It was either password or password 123.
Right.
If I was required to put in a number, yes.
Aliza.
Now it's not.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're impressed.
Okay. So, buying and selling, right. So it talks about this. So, let's just look at the beginning of the second paragraph. You'll find that this is the way of the Torah in many instances, that according to the necessity of a matter or its seriousness, there will be a particular precept about it. And so, too, prohibitions about some matter may be redoubled at many times, as you see about the admonition against idolatry. It was reiterated in 44 places. Yet an admonition was given especially about Molech alone. So, Avodah Zarah, forbidden, right? Idolatry, forbidden, on page 380, what is that, 5? Forbidden everywhere, and an additional prohibition against a specific type that was very prevalent at the time of giving your children to the god of Molech, because that evil worship was very prevalent. So, likewise, 12 admonitions were given in the Torah regarding the Sabbath, yet about some labors, such as burning a fire and carrying things out of doors, we were especially adjured. So, it's just interesting to see that. I'll just parenthetically remind you that we keep Shabbos, Zecher L'Maaseh Breishit, right, to remember creation, and Zecher L'Yetziat Mitzrayim, as a remembrance for the exodus from Egypt. So, and we learn the laws of keeping the Sabbath, the 39 malachas, come from, who knows, for extra credit?
From building the Mishkan.
The labors that it took in order to build the Mishkan are the ones from which we must refrain. Mm-hmm. That accounts for 38 of the 39, because those are creative acts, and we refrain from creativity as a remembrance of the creation of the world, right? But, so that's Zecher L'Maaseh Breishit, remembrance of the creation of the world. But the other one, the remembrance of the exodus from Egypt, Yitziat Mitzrayim, the coming out. So the 39th category mm-hmm. is called hotza'a, which we translate into English as carrying, but it really means taking out, right? Hotza'a yitzia, right? So if Shabbos is about yitziat Mitzrayim also, so then hotza'a, taking things out from domain to domain, is in remembrance of yitziat Mitzrayim, of the exodus from Egypt. That's that 39th category.
Will it get you off topic if I ask, so why the 39th category?
Because there's the two remembrances. It's remembering the creation of the world, that's 38.
Right, but relate that to Shabbos?
Mm.
You should remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy.
And so the two kiddushes that we say, say Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim and Zecher Lama'asei Breishit. They're both clearly tied to in the Torah. Shabbos is to remind you of Yetziat Mitzrayim and Ma'asei Breishit. How are they connected is really your question. Or should be your question, why those two things connected to Shabbos.
Right.
Right? So those two things are displays of God's power in the world. Nobody was there to witness it for creation. So the 10 statements of creation were stated, and we see them in the Torah, all those Vayehi ors and everything, right? That's there, but nobody saw it happen. Whereas the 10 plagues, which were taught Kabbalistically parallel those 10 statements of creation, the whole reason for those plagues, as we reviewed before in Pesach, the point of the plagues was not to get the Jews out, because God didn't need Pharaoh's permission to get the Jews out. The whole point of the plagues was to display God's power on all those same 10 levels in front of witnesses, both Jewish and non-Jewish, to establish the fact that one power is in charge of all those levels of power, all those levels of energy, right? And that's a Rabbi Rieti teaching also, or at least I learned it from him. That's why the first time we encounter the name of God in the Torah, it's in the plural, right? Breishit bara Elohim. What's up with that? If the whole point is God's oneness,
right. How come
what are
multiples?
We doing with plural the first time that we encounter God in the Torah? And it's to teach us that what looks like multiple powers is all from one source. And now that the world's about to be created, it could look like it came about from multiple powers, Elohim.
Sure. The God of the moon, the God of the river, the God of the...
The God of the everything, right? The multiple things, but really there's one God that's the source of all, and that's why it uses that name as the first name. So we are Shabbos, then, is to let us say who's really in charge. We might think we're in charge and we run the show, but if we take time out once a week, a seventh of our life, to say, in fact, we don't run the show. God runs the show, so I'm not going to run anything. So then the running has to parallel both Egypt when there were witnesses and creation when there weren't witnesses. So that's why we have the 38 that we learn about creation, constructive acts that are defined by the building of the Mishkan, and the 39th, which reminds us of the exodus from Egypt. That was a pivotal point in our history, a transformational point. When we say exodus, we mean both the time in Mitzrayim and the exit from Mitzrayim and Har Sinai, all of that, those three things together. Is encapsulated. When we say Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, we really mean all three of those things. The torture in Egypt, the exodus from Egypt, and going to Sinai. All three is that transformational time for the Jew. That's what separates us and changes us from non-Jew to Jew, is that whole parsha. So that's why we remember it so often. That's what flipped us into a different type of being.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, so, and that's important to, so I'll bring that back into this. I encounter occasionally those people who might not believe in the Torah, or those people who will say, the laws are so obvious. Like, what was God innovating here? That you should be fair in buying and selling? Every society has laws like that. Like, what is this, like, such an original God, right? That he came up with this one. Right? Just be honest. Great. Right? But the truth is, you have to see, it's not about innovation here. It's about setting down as laws. How does a society work? But it's not just about that either. It's about, as we've said before, a mitzvah is a physical pathway to a spiritual goal. That's the difference with our laws and other laws. yes, society runs well. If you're honest, if you don't kill people, if you don't steal from people, if you keep boundaries, yes, that helps a society work well. And that's what we do in America, right? And that's, and our boundaries are enforced by consequences. But hopefully, if you come from a deeper place and understand not just I should be fair to you so you'll be fair to me, but that when I'm fair to you, I'm building my olam haba. I'm creating who I am and who I want to be by this very fairness, right? And yes, so now there will be consequences in a society. You're supposed to set up courts of justice to adjudicate disputes, and so there should be consequences to keep people in line. You need that for a society that functions well, just like you need food to be able to learn Torah, right? We have this concept of im ein kemach ein Torah. If there's no flour, there's no Torah. You have to eat to be able to think, right? You have to have a just society to be able to function well. Right, so yes, you have to just set up. There is just that, and that's why it's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach to set up courts of justice. You have to have justice to make everything work. But it's so much more. If you end there, then it's like saying you don't eat pork because of trichinosis. You know, that's not it. And it's not that you just want to have a just society so that people could live next door to each other. That's not it. It's so much more. That's just the beginning. Right? We need that as a prerequisite.
Like sort of the minimal amount.
Right. That's just a prerequisite to allow us to create the depth that we want. Just like I wrote to somebody that somebody said they were very happy to receive my email. They want to join my Derech Hashem class because over Pesach they realized they're not learning enough. And I said, you know, over Pesach, I also, like, you know, I... Oh, she said, how was your Pesach? And I said, it was great. I davened when I lit candles that Hashem should skip over my lack of preparedness, my lack of adequate depth, and just bring me straight into his inner circle of, you know, of teachers, of servants, and of people who help Klal Yisrael, because that's what I wanted. And I said, and then that was probably my last prayer for the entire Pesach, except for the Haggadah and benching. But I didn't make it to shul once, and all I did was cook, clean, and serve, cook, clean, and serve. But we had a great family time, and I'm sure it was facilitated by the chocolate chip cookies that I made. So she wrote me back and said, thanks so much for giving me chizuk in the role of an Eishes Chayil over Pesach, you know, that it is so important to create those strong family memories and good associations, and cookies are certainly a part of that. So it's important to know, like, what are you doing here? Sometimes it is time for cookies, and sometimes it's time to run to shul, you know, but you have to know what you're trying to accomplish. Cookies are not for the cookie, they're for the chatting that comes with the cookies. Or they're for the kisses that the kids give to the mom or the mom gives to the kid with the cookie. Like, it's for, it facilitates, right? So a just society facilitates a spiritual path. It's not for the sake of a just society. It's for the sake of the facilitation. It's a prerequisite. So you could say you learned today that a just society is like a chocolate chip cookie.
They are very good cookies.
Thanks.
Someone told me they almost are like hummus.
They're better than I think they're better than hummus cookies. That's the truth. They're, really? Everybody loves it. Email me, I'll send you that.
Yeah,
should just print it out. Bring it. You should just print it out.
Just society is like what I'm.
Chocolate chip cookie
facilitates spiritual path, or chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah, I got that part. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Right, so he
Moving
says here,
right along.
Right, the root cause for trials of law and justice is known and evident because it's something that human intelligence affirms and seeks, for with justice, a settled community life can endure among people. Right, right. It's only the prerequisite. Right, rule of law. It's only the prerequisite. So
there's so much here because it's
there's so much here, but it talks about, so it's interesting things. The halacha has to delineate when a transaction has taken place. If it's fair. That's the second one, which we'll go into. But this one is just delineating when it has taken place and how do you know, right? At what point was the sale affected? Let's say I'll say to you, I'm going to buy all the wheat in your granary, right? I'll buy all the wheat in your field, right? And we make a deal, right? We see each other. I'm going to buy it. Now there's a plague of locusts, right? And all the wheat's eaten. Whose loss is it? I didn't take possession of it yet, but we talked about it. So the question is, you have to know, when was the sale affected? Was it with the agreement? Was it with a transfer of a handkerchief? That's why we do that when you sell your chametz. You know, you pick up something. Picking up something is crossing the line into the sale being made. But that's why the halacha is very careful about when is the line, right? You have a plague of locusts. Whose loss is it, the buyer or the seller? right? When was, or whatever, a fire in the granary after it's been harvested, or whatever, or the market plummets and it's no longer worth what you agreed, right? All these different things you have to know because those
things can
happen.
Some of them are clearer than others.
Right, because these things can happen, you have to know where is the line of purchase, and how
like
is that,
that
purchase
even
made?
In our tax laws today.
Right, yeah, you have to know. Right, so you do have to delineate. So some people will say, you know, oh, Jewish law is so picky with all the hair splitting. But you know what the truth is? You have to split hairs sometimes because you have to know exactly when and what. You know, when are you married? When are you not married? When is that adulterous? When is that not? You know, there's a line, and you have to know when the line has been crossed. So that you have to establish the line to know when
you
was
receive it. Stock, you pay tax on the day that you received it or the day that you sell it.
Uh-huh, right, right. As a retailer, you would know that question. Right, so these are all...
Depends on if you own it or not.
If you receive the stock, right? It's the same idea.
Yeah, but then do you own the stock
it,
or is
but the question
loan?
Is, but the you question is, if you've received sale, it, right? but it's on consignment, in essence, the person that you received it from doesn't get paid until you sell it, then who owns it? When it's in your possession,
or when you receive it,
that's what I'm saying.
When do you pay tax on it?
Well, right. All these questions, right? So that's why there's tons of halacha, and a large chunk of the Gemara is written about this. So that's like just on page 397. These and other details of the precept, numerous indeed, are explained in the first chapter of the Talmud, Tractate Kedushin, in chapters 4, 8, and 9 of Bava Metzia, and chapters 3 through 7 of Bava Batra. And some of them are in other places in the Talmud scattered. Okay, so that's where you can find it. And now the halacha, it applies everywhere at every time for men, since it is for them to carry out justice. So, of course, we have to behave justly, but this halacha is to adjudicate. Not to behave justly, but to establish courts of justice and determine if justice has taken place or not. Right? The precept of effecting justice, that we should render judgment about purchase and sale in the way the Torah commanded about it. Right? So that's this halacha.
So it's not really about an individual's behavior, but it's about the
this particular
mitzvah, one.
This
yes.
particular, because there are other ones where we are
right.
We are held on, and that would apply right. to men and women equally.
Affecting
this
justice.
Is to render judgment. So that's a man's job to judge. Is this fair or not fair? To set up those courts of law and to have a judge that's trained in it, and to be able to bring it to a judge and to have it effectively judged. That's a man's thing. That's not our mitzvah.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay, I think we can do 337 also. The prohibition against wronging anyone in buying and selling. So here, it's a different thing then. So this is us, right? Let me just make sure who this applies to. This is not about... let's see.
Men and women.
Say, yeah, men and women. Yeah, this is men and women because... No,
407.
Right, neither man nor woman is supposed to wrong anybody. So this is not about judging.
This one's about
actually
behavior.
Wronging. Mm-hmm. Right, so here you're not allowed to sell something for too much of a profit or to sell it unfairly, say that this is better than it is or worse than it is. And it's interesting.
Now, is there a reciprocal obligation on the part of the buyer not to pay too little?
Yes. So I flagged that.
Okay.
Where is it? Let's see.
Good question.
My husband is the only person who goes to a flea market and pays somebody more than they ask because he thinks they're not charging enough.
Right, so occasionally that happens. I mean, sometimes people... have a friend who at a flea market...
But don't wrong him.
Right. Yeah, but don't... Right.
But I have a friend who went to a flea market and saw a necklace, like an Art Deco necklace, and they wanted it, and it was like, you know, $30. And he said, this necklace is...
Worth a
lot. He said, this necklace is actually... It's platinum and diamonds. He said, no, it's metal and glass. The seller said, it's metal and glass. It's $30. So my friend said, actually, it's platinum and diamonds. And the guy said, it's $30. Do you want it or not?
Well, then at that point, you buy it.
So then he tried, you know, he said it's, and he bought it for $30. He had it appraised at
$17,000. Okay. Yeah, well, that doesn't happen too often.
He tried.
I, on the other hand, buy the $17,000 one, and it gets appraised at $30.
Right, like I said, or that guy who bought the painting or something.
Yeah, that would be me.
Right. So let's look at 401, the middle paragraph. Among the laws of the precept, there is what the sages of blessed memory taught, that the vendor and buyer are both adjured by this admonition. For it is stated, if you sell anything or buy, and the purchaser is not to say, it's the way of the vendor to know the value of what he's selling. So that's, and since he's selling it to me for a slight price, I bear no sin.
Wrong.
For it is not so. Both are subject to the admonition, and both are likewise subject to the laws about wronging, as the sages of blessed memory differentiated them. And so it is taught in the Mishnah, the law against defrauding applies to the seller and buyer alike.
So it's like if somebody gives you too much change, it's your obligation to go back and say,
yes,
you gave me too much change.
Yes.
Or if you see something in a store and you think, boy, this really seems mismarked, it's way too little money,
don't just bring it up to the cashier and buy it. Say, is this the right price? And let them call a manager and check it out. Because you could just slide right by. It's Hobby Lobby. Everything was discounted. And, like, you could walk out with $2 for a $50 item. But the truth is, you should say, I don't know.
They have the cranberries for $1.88 over there, too.
But they also
cranberries are really good.
They're $1.88.
It's on their website.
That they proselytize today, right? I know you're against Hobby Lobby.
Did you go
buy
them all?
So Michaels. Go to Michaels. They don't proselytize.
Ladies, Michaels is a better choice.
Then Hobby Lobby, yes.
Because Hobby Lobby proselytizes.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
they
I don't know.
Really,
I think we should ask Shiloh about it, because
it's not even a. It's not.
No. The question, the Shiloh, my Shiloh would be, for sure they proselytize. Is it bad to proselytize and bring people to God?
No, right.
In this society,
right.
To patronize a store that closes on Sundays and has a sign that says, "We've closed our store so that our employees have time for worship and family."
Yes. Nothing.
Is that bad?
No.
I don't think it's good.
It's just that they don't carry Hanukkah items or anything else for Jews.
Oh, really?
They're sort of set. It's more like a religious store.
Oh, they're very. No, it's like Michael's, except ownership is Christian.
Yeah.
And they won't carry anything related to Jewish holidays.
And they're closed on Sunday?
And they're closed on Sunday.
They're closed on Sunday.
Yeah.
I've only gone to Michael's. Hobby Lobby.
Is there anything wrong with Faith Bible Church? No. It's very nice that they support Israel. Why do they support Israel?
Because they believe. It's because they think that it's to their benefit.
They want us to convert.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not even. It's maybe they do, but they for sure understand that the second coming is only going to happen after all the Jews are in Israel.
Yeah. Right.
So they want to make sure the Jews can get to Israel.
Exactly.
So the second coming can happen.
I said it's to their benefit.
Yes. So it's not wrong, but I mean, you really want to get into bed with people like that?
Right. Right.
The ulterior motive people?
Well, I know. As somebody who, we spent a lot of time, Sandy and I, with a very evangelical trainer. Several hours a week. And
you have great muscles for it.
There you go.
Yeah, but we also, I tell you,
we just
the,
have other, a lot
the flip
discussion.
Of it is, and the other story is, I was in Minnesota last week, and this guy in his store has a Wednesday morning men's Bible study at 6 a.m., and 7:45 every morning, they have a prayer session. He's Catholic. A lot of his employees are other Christian. You know,
Catholics aren't Christians.
And well, different evangelical. but he
Catholic
has
say that.
But you know what? The fact is that this guy also kind of lives. He kind of lives that kind of a life too. So and so does Ty in many ways. And I don't know. I guess I feel like people who, and he said to me, "Oh, you're Jewish. You live on the Old Testament, right?" And I said, "Yes."
Yeah. Well, that would be the only Testament, but whatever.
I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I said yes until you decided to rewrite it. It was the only one." I said
exactly.
that, and he didn't care. Uh-huh. And he said, "Well, because they do both." And
they do both. Yeah,
they think
they do both.
Well,
because they use
their translation. But I have to say that. I'm kind of in the, people who are.
It's better to be Yerushalayim.
It's
so I'll
better
tell you
to
Vilna
have some belief.
Sure, right. It's just like, let's just be honest with what we're trying
right,
to
so the question is the ulterior motive. But the Vilna Gaon one time, I think I told the story here, there's a famous story, he's riding in a wagon, right, and he and a shamish, and when they got to their destination, he told the shamish to dismiss the wagon driver and to hire a new one for the way back. Why? Because he noticed when they passed a church, the driver did not cross himself. And he wasn't riding in a wagon without a Yerushalayim driver. So,
yeah, so there's
precedent.
No, I think
religion is great. My dear friend is an Episcopalian priest.
Yeah. That's right, I remember that.
Yeah.
Some of my best friends are priests.
Yeah. Okay.
I just want to show you quickly before you put away your books. You have to run.
I will see you all in a month.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to India.
Oh, wow.
Speaking of spiritual.
As a tourist?
As a tourist.
Oh, how wonderful.
In Malaysia and Sri Lanka. But first I'm going to Charlotte.
I saw a picture of a bicyclist who made it to the top of the mountain.
Yes,
the yogi at the top. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
So the yogi's there at the top and the bicyclist is there panting. And his advice is, wear a helmet.
Good advice. Very always good. Good advice.
Very good. All right. Thank you.
I just want to see one more. It's just an interesting thing.
Thank
you. On page 404, I just want to point out in the Hebrew, in the second paragraph, and the second to the last line of the second paragraph in the Hebrew, says, Aval balabatim ein mochrim kleihem. Right, so I just think it's interesting to see balabatim, because we use that term all the time in English Jewish. Right?
In English
we say balabatim, meaning householders or people mm-hmm. who... not a merchant, so that this applies also to purchasing from a householder as it does to a merchant. But it talks about that householders, because it's discussing here if you make more too much of a profit on something, it says that's not the case when you buy something from a balabas, from somebody who owns a home, because everybody knows that private sellers, I'm selling
always
my...
always overcharge.
Well, because I'm selling my antique desk.
So you have a high price.
I have a higher price for that than you're going to, you know, pay for it at the antique store. Go to the antique store and there's no emotions in it. It's just somebody selling a desk. But I'm selling, this is a special desk, my desk. And everybody
it's been
knows.
My family.
Yeah, everybody knows I'm going to charge you more because you're buying from me. I don't have to sell what the store sells it for. There's not a lot of these. There's just mine. So buy it from me or not. But so I'm not subject to the exactitude of the not more than 1/6 profit on it. Mm. As a balabas. So I just thought it was interesting to see in the Hebrew that balei batim, because we use that today, so it's 1300s. And finally, on page 407, second paragraph from the top, you should know that all the rules of cheating here are only in regard to the value of the object. Meaning if I tell you that it's worth 6 when it's really worth 5, that's what this mitzvah was talking about. But not if I tell you it's 10 feet long and it's really only 9. That's a different type of cheating.
So this
weights
is all about
measures.
Value.
This is about value, not about weights and measures or thicknesses or anything like that, which you can retract right away. This is about value. It's a whole different thing. And finally, the punishment is not, you don't get whipped for this, even though there is a physical thing, because you can fix it. So you don't have to get whipped for the fixing. You just have to fix the sale for the fixing. You have to refund the money or cancel the transaction, whatever it is, but it can be fixed. And we'll end on that, and we'll have to do 338 next time, which is not to oppress any Jew with work.
Now, are we having class next week?
Yes.
Okay.
There's class next week.
I'm coming in.
Coming in from St. Louis, okay. Landing at 7:21 a.m.
I'm excited to see you.
She's in St. Louis?
Yeah.
Great.
You're landing at 7:21
a.m.